Welcome back to the Mediocre Alaskan Podcast. Doing a solo episode today. Going to recap big game lessons from the year since big game hunting is over in at least my part of Alaska. So I'm going to recap that. Before I do that, I want to give a big thank you to everybody who's been buying my book on Amazon.com. Also in Ketchikan at Parnassus Books, in Juneau at Hearthside Books, as well as Rainy Retreat Books. It's awesome to get an email saying that a new order is required. So I really appreciate people who are buying the book and then recommending it to others, and people who've made or written reviews on Amazon. And it's just great. It's very, very humbling for sure. And then also people who've been listening to the podcast. It's been a really fun year of improving the podcast, going 2 episodes a week and meeting new people, talking to new people, and then just so many new opportunities when it comes to hunting and fishing outdoors and just, you know, everything. You know, talking to Jeff and Jess about the hydroponic farming, you know, just interesting things, interesting people. It's really been a fun way to connect, and some great people I've talked to over the years. It's been awesome. I'm really grateful for the chance, and for people who've been listening, like yourself, greatly appreciated. So as far as stuff that I've learned this year, it's sometimes you go into a hunt and you learn some things, and sometimes you're just, the basic fundamentals are being reinforced, and sometimes you didn't learn anything. It doesn't mean that you've got it figured out. It just means that you just barely scratched the surface so much, you still don't really feel like you have a good grasp on what the program is. I think that was the March hunt I did in Caribou for Caribou on the 40-mile herd. It was a resident-only kind of cull the herd hunt. The numbers have been excellent, upwards of 80,000 animals, which is a massive recovery and a great success story. I think they were down to like a couple thousand in the 70s and the 90s in the 20s or 30s, but through great management, excellent management, and following through with the management plan, there's a lot of animals, and so they're able to have 2 hunts that are quota hunts. The first one in the fall / late summer, and then the second hunt more for locals, and they do it in the winter so that the terrain is not torn up by all-terrain vehicles, four-wheelers, things like that. And so doing it during the winter when it's all coated in snow, you're gonna preserve the territory. One of the issues was when you have too many animals in a small area, you're going to put a lot of stress on the resources, and you're going to stress the animals. So that was an awesome hunt to go on, but it was just so different to be kind of so rushed. Never been on a hunt that cold, and we just drove around on snow machines for a couple miles at a time, and then we'd put them back on the trailer, drive a little bit further, and just looking for something that was relatively close to the road. So I don't know if that's like if that is the Caribou program, or if that is just the winter version of the Caribou program. Cause if you just take off on a snow machine and just go in one direction or spend 30 or 40 miles from one stop, I don't know if that would, I mean, if they're not there, they're not there, I guess. You do a lot of glassing. So we ended up putting, I think, 60 miles on the snow machines, but that was after stopping 4 or 5 times. We'd go to one spot, maybe a 5 to 10 mile circuit, do some glassing, and then drive further down the highway, pull off, unload, drive around again, glass. So super interesting, super fun, super different. It was nice that I had enough clothing to be warm. That was huge, huge to be able to do that. I'd never been on a snow machine before, so I'm very grateful to Harrison Gotchling. We recapped that. I don't know what episode that is. I should be a little bit more prepared, but that was a lot of fun to talk to Harrison about that. And just have him, you know, being willing to take me under his wing and put me on a snow machine, and then just kind of have me follow him around, and super fun, and end up getting caribou, and just great experience, super new. I don't know if I would do it again. I kind of want to. I think now that I'm back and I kind of know what to expect. But it's always fun to being able to be a little bit more self-sufficient is a lot of fun. So you're not just the tag along that doesn't really know what at all to do. Things end up working out and you make the shot. But when you leave the hunt, all you did was make the shot, which is a huge part of it, of course, but you're so reliant on someone else when you're doing a hunt that's totally new. And, you know, Harrison had the program down, Harrison drove the truck, Harrison made the call about where we're going to pull off. And so, super interesting how people were very friendly up there, helpful up there. And I'm not sure if that is, again, if that's indicative of a winter hunt when it's locals helping each other out, because the main goal is just to get food, versus the chaos of, you know, Tyler Friel and other people talk about just how crazy that 40-mile hunt is, during the other parts of the year when people are just, you know, people are shooting animals and they've already got, you know, bullet holes in them. Just crazy madness. And I'm not sure if people are as helpful because they don't want a whole bunch of other people going where they are and then adding to that mess. But, so I guess if I was going to learn anything from caribou, it was just, how great the meat is and how tender and how lean it was and how I thought it was going to be almost jerky. Because if you're shooting this thing in March and it hasn't been eating lush, fresh lichen, and it's been in the cold and it's been using its fat in order to make it through the winter, I just figured this thing would be just not taste good at all. And it may have been because I shot a cow, which you're allowed to do. Again, this is culling the herd. In some areas, you can't shoot cows. But in this area, you could. And, you know, like, it was tender, delicious meat. Totally different than what I expected. I'm not sure if a bull would have tasted like that, and I'm not sure if a bull would taste that good in the late summer, early fall. But man, that cow tasted unbelievable. So good, so tender. And I would love to go back up there and do a really good caribou hunt and just kind of see how close that spring experience is to the actual or the rest of the year program. It's probably pretty different, but certainly fun and certainly makes me want to go back up there. But shortly after that, went out for brown bear, and it was cool to see how similar it was to black bear hunting, where you're just kind of driving around in a boat and then you try to find something and then you try to make a stock on it. The number one thing, of course, is being, you got to worry about your scent. And so that was pretty fun and it was wild too. You're making a stock on an animal, but this isn't black bear country where you're making a stock through the woods, paying attention to the wind and your noise with black bears around. Like, you're doing it in brown bear territory. So as we were trying to make a move on this, brown bear that was eating clams on the shore, digging them up, you know, you're sneaking through the woods quiet, you know, like, you know, what if you jump a black bear, that's one thing. You spook a black bear, that's one thing. But, you know, what if you come upon a sow and cub brown bear? Then it's a big, that's a whole different story. So as similar as it was to black bear hunting, it was kind of unnerving to be sneaking around, and, you know, your wind's in the right direction for the animal that you are looking after. But, you know, what about the one that you haven't seen? What about the one that's back in the woods? It's bedded down. That's, you know, it's walking through the woods, might be heading that direction. So it was pretty crazy, but super fun hunt. And again, it was really great to be able to go out with friends, you know, Brian, Kyla taking me out, you know, showing me the ropes. It's so nice to have people who are willing to show you, because everybody had to be shown by someone. Even if your first time was a solo hunt, you know, at some point you figured out that a hunt existed, and you figured out the hunt existed by talking to someone, by listening to someone, by seeing something, by reading something. So someone brought that hunt to your attention, and it's fun to have someone to be able to kind of show you around. And so the spring was just great, and that being able to hunt with those friends and have them kind of show me the ropes and see what was going on and to be successful. So it was so cool, so cool. And then walking up on that brown bear was just, the hair is different, just super, super beautiful and just awesome. So like the whole year started off with such an amazing start that I was really looking forward to blacktail season. And the blacktail season started off pretty good. The first buck I got was low. It was in a clear cut. You know, typically you think of Sitka blacktail, you think alpine for August and into September, and then October is kind of a dead period toward the mid to late part. Depending on where you're at, the rut can be at different times. So some people don't even start hunting until November. Other people wait all the way until Thanksgiving. But in the Ketchikan area, you know, I really look at Halloween as really things are getting going. And so that last week of October, first week of November is, man, I'm really excited about rut for blacktail. But of course, I like alpine better. It's nice. You get up the mountains and you just look at this green terrain, and then you see this thing sticking out, just looks in red or just glowing against the background. So it's super cool to get up there and do that. And it was cool to go to a new mountain. So the first buck I got was in a clear cut. Second one was up in a mountain, alpine type terrain. And gosh, you know, two awesome bucks to start the year. And I started to think about, hey man, might as well shoot another one, because alpine's great. And if you can get up there and if the weather permits, which it doesn't do all the time, a lot of times you have a very narrow window. So you got to get up the mountain and it's rainy. You have one day where it kind of clears to hunt. And that was why I had to, that first one was in a clear cut, because I went up for the opener and it was so stinking windy. And I tried to make a move on one, but it was only briefly out in the open, and it was kind of frustrating. I'd gone to that same spot the last 3 years, and so I think I don't think it was like fished out or anything like that, but you know, you keep going to a spot over and over and over again, you know, and other people could be going to that spot too. It might take a year or so, or maybe a couple of years off is the way to go. So it was nice that my honey hole was not successful, but I was able to find two other great bucks to start off the year. And that's part of, I guess, growing and being more confident that you're not reliant on this specific spot that's been good before, and also not reliant on someone else. So to be able to go out and do it yourself and feel competent enough to be able to figure things out and make things happen was a great. So by the time the end of August came around, I was, man, just unbelievable. Got a first ever caribou, first ever brown bear, got two stud black-tailed deer. One was a 4x2, which is kind of interesting. The other one was a 4x3 with a kicker. So I mean, it was just so thick and mass. The mass was the thing that really was awesome. So then things kind of got a little bit weird. My wife, who was still down in Laramie, finishing up some stuff before coming up here to finish up her PhD remotely, she was seeing a ton of elk down there, and this is her last resident hunt down there. She was seeing a ton of elk on the game cameras that we'd put out, and you know, we'd seen them when we are checking the game cameras during the summer. And when September rolls around and she was going out for the archery hunt, and she was hearing them and she was seeing them, and she got really close to a bull, came into her call to about 20 yards, and she wasn't able to draw. And then later on, there was a cow that came in. I just so many encounters, and I was so excited to get down there. And that was all about the middle of September. And I was going to head down there the last week of September, so the last week of archery season, because I didn't want to take time off at the very beginning of the school year, because you got to kind of build that rapport with the kids, and before you take off, school in Alaska doesn't start until last week of August. So it's not like some schools that start the first week of August, and so by the time September rolls around, you've had a month with the kids, you know, to have a week or two with the kids and then take off for a little bit. I just wasn't super comfortable with that. So last week, figured it'd still be fine. It's still archery season. And I go down there, and we didn't hear one bugle. It was unbelievable just how the elk had just gone quiet. And the weather went from pretty warm to cool to cold, and there was some snow and there was some sleet. And so we thought, that's gonna make it happen. Things are gonna get going again. But man, nothing. Had three encounters. One, there wasn't even a chance of getting a shot. We were trying to sneak in, and this was probably 300 yards from the wallow where we'd seen a couple on the game cameras, and where Abby had called one in. So on our way there, we spooked one. And then later, we were thinking that we had called one in, but it had been totally quiet coming in. And so we had actually started to move again. And as we were moving, we kind of came around in front of this tree, and then we saw one right there, and oh my gosh, it's right there. And its vitals were exposed, but you know, when you see something like that, your first instinct is, I guess, I mean, if you're experienced, you just, you know, raise the bow and shoot. But you know, we weren't exactly sure what the yardage was. And so we were more concerned with kind of getting out of view of it. And then trying to figure out what to do and maybe get it closer, but it ended up being just 30 yards, but it took off. It had at least one cow with it. So didn't get a shot on that one. And then the third one we saw was, we just, you know, by chance kind of walking through the woods and happened to see one that was 65, 68 yards and it took off. So, one pretty good chance, but nothing like we had expected and had seen before. And when Abby had posted up and had called something in, we tried that and just hadn't happened. And so the three encounters we had were while we were moving, and we were moving super slow, but just nothing was coming to the calls. Nothing was even making any sort of noises. So we couldn't locate the elk. And then, okay, if this thing's over there, like, what is he doing? Are we going to try to call him in? Is he coming to us? We couldn't even make a plan because we weren't sure if there was anything around. So that was kind of frustrating, kind of a letdown. I felt bad that Abby had kind of stopped hunting to wait for me. I don't think she was cocky to the point where she thought, well, I'm going to kill this thing. So I don't want to kill this thing when you're not around. I don't think she was that, you know, cocky or confident, but, neither one of us expected that, it was just going to turn off like it did. So, fortunately, the day after elk season for archery closed, a mule deer season opened, and we were able to get Abby on an awesome mule deer. So that was super cool. There's an area, and I don't know. I made the call to kind of go around, and but I don't know if it was intuition or if it was a smart move. Maybe I was just impatient, but we were looking one area down in this valley, and just didn't look very mule deer-y. You know, I don't have a lot of experience, but for some reason I just didn't really like it. We'd walked through that previously on the elk hunt a couple days before, and it just didn't seem like there was much going on there. And so we just kind of hooked around and went, I don't know, maybe a half mile further kind of down this ridge in a different area, and found some different terrain, different vegetation, and saw some mule deer bucks. Man, it was crazy. There was at least 12 of them there. We'd only seen four, and we're just waiting for the good one, because there were four of them and they were kind of walking. And because there was four, we kind of look at, okay, number four is the biggest of the four. Let's just wait for this one to come back from behind this bush. First one emerged and then went, second one, third one, then the fourth one came out, and Abby made a great shot and took it down. So I guess what I learned from that one was just that vegetation and paying attention to the way that the mountain or the slope faces. You glass your face off for sure, but also there's a level of confidence that has to go into it too. If you're not really feeling super confident, then maybe you need to move to a different spot. Feel good about it, made it happen. And then blacktail rut came around, and man, just didn't happen. It didn't happen. Weren't seeing a whole lot of we saw some sign, but just weren't having encounters and tried to call, and nothing was coming in. And we tried different methods of calling, and we waited and tried to be short calls, long calls, just threw the kitchen sink at him. It was just crazy. We definitely were in an area that has been hit pretty hard. And so we just kind of wondered if that was taking its toll. It's an area that some people have been calling as early as September. And so you wonder if by the time late October rolls around, if the dumb ones have already been called in and shot, or if they've been tricked so many times that their reaction to that call is not what it should be. Some people reported having better luck with grunting and with rattling. And we tried a little bit of that too, but, just didn't happen. We finally ended up, we went to a spot that was a little bit more isolated, took the boat, and I had to do a row, and then we hiked up, and it was a great spot that just took more time to get to and was probably either too much work or overlooked or something, but definitely wasn't much pressure at all that we could see. And Abby called in a little forky, and that was awesome. So I took that, and so I guess, you know, sticking with it, you know, that's not a new lesson. That's just something that, you know, that you have to do. And just battling that frustration. Gosh, dang it. You just get so frustrated, or I do. And it's so easy to say the right things and, oh, just keep hammering. But man, I just got, you just get down and you just get low and you start to feel like you're the only person who hasn't got a buck. Even though you know that's not true, you just gotta fight that. And then I think I did a better job on some days than others, but just kind of reminding myself that, hey, man, you're in the woods and you're hunting with your wife. Like, this is pretty stinking good. Trying to keep that perspective, because, you know, if I get upset at myself when I'm hunting by myself, that's, you know, it's just me. But, you know, if you're ruining the experience for someone else because your attitude, that's not what you want to do. It's not what I wanted to do. So I try to keep a better frame of reference. And then when I was frustrated, you know, tried to internalize it or tried to, cause I'm the type of person who will like chastise myself as a way of like, hey man, you can do this. And so what you're doing right now is ridiculous. You need to do a better job. Not like bad self-worth. I'm worthless. I have, you know, no self-esteem. But sometimes, you know, that negative self-talk can ruin stuff for other people. And so I had to be kind of aware of that and aware of my reactions. And so the way I handle it as far as getting frustrated and upset and getting the emotions out and then kind of recalibrating that way, I just had to make sure that I wasn't in the process of making myself feel better, not making it a bad experience for someone else. So, but Abby it was a lot of fun being out there with Abby. And, you know, she doesn't have her year in the state yet. So she's not a resident. So she wasn't able to hunt, but, you know, it's gotta be pretty boring just getting dragged along in the forest, cold and wet and, you know, not finding deer. So I'm sure it had to be pretty frustrating at times, or at least boring, but, it was awesome to be out there with her and made it a lot more fun. Even when it was kind of frustrating, but, yeah, so that'll do it. That's it. Got 3 out of my 4 blacktail deer. And, now just looking at, 2022, it'll look, I guess somewhat similar in that, be a spring bear, but looking for a black bear, not a brown bear. And then, blacktail. That's, and then of course, mountain goat. It'd be nice to get a mountain goat one of these years. There's a over the counter opportunity, but it's really tough to get to some of the areas, and you know, the weather is so vital. And it can be tough to get to some of those spots because not only are you worried about getting up the mountain when you can see, but also if the weather is going to allow you to even get back there with your boat. So the fly-in thing is pretty stinking expensive, and that's not something that that I'm looking at doing. So I guess another thing about, you know, learning has been the food. It's been awesome to make some sausage and pepperoni sticks and things like that with Abby. That's been a lot of fun. Just new ways for preparation of the meat. And so you can just have it in a variety of different ways rather than just having it in ground form or steak form, you know, figuring out new ways to do it. Not that it gets old, but just, it's just fun to, you know, have some pepperoni, you know, have some with some cheese and some crackers or different recipes for roasts and just mix it up. So been just a great year. And when I look at it in those terms about the whole year, not just how rut was kind of disappointing. Just look at the entire year and think about how unbelievable it is that you have the opportunity to do these things. And, with the wife that I do and with the friends that I have and, be able to share that on a podcast and in my column in the Juneau Empire, it's just unbelievable. I want to keep getting after it and keep doing more stuff and just, take advantage of all the opportunities I have here. So, we'll call that good. Thanks for listening. I hope you had a good 2021, and I hope your 2022 big game is shaping up good. We still got a couple weeks of duck season left, so I think this weekend, maybe the next weekend too, Abby and I'll try to get out and get after some ducks and some geese, and then winter steelhead, and then 2022 is right around the corner. So take care, good luck, and we'll talk to you next time.